review of Woman Pissing by Elizabeth Cooperman, reviewed by Mackenzie Watson Ford. Woman Pissing probes gendered approaches to making art and the struggle to resist the suffocation of self-doubt. The book, which is literary nonfiction, begins firmly rooted in the narrator's own sense of artistic failure. "I had hoped," she writes, "to invent a literary form that could accommodate ambivalence, hesitation, crippling self-doubt, lack of any sense of the way forward." But what Cooperman prefaces as a failure emerges over the next 160 pages as a resonant, lingering success. It satisfies and surprises, unconventional and bold, a startling riff on domesticity and creativity. The book is written in crotts, short bursts of text surrounded by white space, a paratactic prose style favored by writers such as David Shields, Eula Biss, and Jenny Offill. The crot lends itself to heavily associative writing, rich with repetition, intertextual connections, and implied meaning. In lieu of plot points and a traditional narrative arc, collage or crot works develop through accumulation and juxtaposition. The prose style is fragmented, rhizomatic. Cooperman's crots are organized into approximately 100 brief chapters, each named, like the book itself, for a different Picasso painting. The famed virtuoso hovers over the book as the godlike incarnation of the self-assured male artist. Woman Pissing takes Picasso's bravado-soaked declaratives and subjects those claims to a bloodletting. Cooperman's narrator invokes Julian Barnes's assertion that Picasso dramatically simplified art. One page later, Cooperman demonstrates thus: "Because Bonnard kept watching the sky, it became a dozen different colors." How hilarious that Bonnard cannot paint a sky blue, thought Picasso. Opposing forces propel the narrative forward. Picasso as foil for Lee Krasner, Catherine Mansfield, and Jean Rhys, the representation in triplicate of meticulous, self-doubting, overlooked female artists. Krasner is introduced early as an artist in her own right, but when she met and married Jackson Pollock, she determined to support his career. She cooked, canned, jammed, and house-cleaned. Cooperman's narrator provides just enough of a catalog of unrealized potential to indicate that a systemic dismissal or override is at play. Women siloed to the kitchen and the bedroom, saddled with more domestic concerns. There's an expectation that as a woman, I'll make a home. Later, she quotes art critic Clement Greenberg, showing how these expectations are used against women. Lee should have had more faith in herself and more independence, but that is the problem with all female artists. The book is an intricate patchwork of gender-coded references. A great gold-leafed phallic sculpture is erected as a monument against an aging man's imminent obsolescence. Cooperman's narrator expresses distaste for her own work by associating it with images of feminine domesticity and labor, saying, "My book feels like a tacky old grandma quilt," and, elsewhere, "an old clothes basket." Gradually, the gender-coded references coalesce into the narrator's anxiety about her childlessness. Fruit, flowering plants, and eggs recur as signifiers for female reproductive capacity, their unanimous femininity seeming to liberate men from the responsibility of human reproduction and caretaking. Cooperman's narrator allows this implication to hover long enough on the page to become apparent, and then she undermines it by shuffling the gender associations. She describes white petals matted to the driveway like little white condoms. She likens Alberto Giacometti's World War II-era sculptures to little worry dolls, a rhetorical move that places femininity in the museum or hides the sculptures under a girl's pillow. She applies masculine coding to her own menstrual cycle by labeling it a technology, like the internet, dry cleaning, or art. Cooperman's narrator observes the world around her with a shrewd and unflinching eye. Her tone is ferocious and unrelenting, sparing no one, yet not without humor. She satirizes the hubris of self-assured men like Picasso, Pollock, and the boyfriend whom she labels the artist, the moniker itself reading as a bit of ironic adulation. The artist rubs his nose, encloses his new poem in the rectangle that means done, as he does every morning. For a kiss, he pushes his sharp beard against my blank forehead. But for all its preemptive admission of failure, woman pissing never concedes. The narrator assembles a case for effortful art. The male artists she names exhibit efficiency, she acknowledges, but at what cost? Woman pissing enacts and celebrates an alternative model of artistry, rooted in attention, skepticism, and complexity. She trades Picasso's respect for gigantism for her own fascination with microscopy and detail. She prizes ornamentation over sparseness. The thesis of the book is so subtle it's almost hidden, tucked into the titular section in a brief meditation on the neighborhood dominatrix, the female embodiment of creative nonconformity. The dominatrix is cast as a prolific artist, making choices that the narrator correlates to a DIY aesthetic that challenged the culture to use all the parts of the animal. Cooperman demonstrates that the full range of human feeling and experience can serve as valid fodder for art, not just the triumphant, the effulgent, or the ejaculatory. Woman pissing revels in the fecundity of the world and celebrates the artistic impulse, even when it is laborious and uncertain. Cooperman's narrator bookends the work with another declarative desire. "I'm still trying to invent a form," she says, "that accepts aesthetic decisions as provisional, events as uncertain, life as unportrayable, a form that concedes art is unsatisfying." Cooperman has found a compelling and dynamic form, but I contend with one point. Woman pissing is an audacious and satisfying work of art.